Hey everyone, welcome to the 8th episode of the Untitled Gadget Podcast. It has been 2 months since we've been doing this and the world became a totally different place. For one thing, we cannot go out anymore and nor can we get essentials judging by the state of things. But let's not focus on all that now. You're listening to this to get away from the drudgery and the chaos that is going on with the lockdown. So let's focus on more uplifting news. This week, I'm joined once again by Dhruv and Akshay, and we have a special guest joining us from POCO. We're joined by Yash Garg, and he's the lead for product communication and marketing at POCO India. And he'll give us a few insights on the brand and its journey over the last 2 years. Before we begin, let's start off with, how are you guys doing? How is it going?
Okay, Harish, I think you got the designation wrong. It's product marketing and communications, not product communications and marketing. So that's for a start.
Oh, shit. The lockdown's getting to all of us.
Quite clearly.
Hey, man, I got all three names right.
No. If you guys are going to listen to the end and you have to listen to the bloopers, you'll see how he screwed up the intro and names. So you have to listen to this. That's an Easter egg for you guys to check out later in the episode, like towards the end.
I'm still counting this as a win. All right. So we're joined by Yash Garg, lead product marketing and communications at POCO India. Yeah?
Absolutely fine. That's awesome. A great job, man.
Yes. it sounds like one. So, for those that don't know Yash, he's been in the industry for a long time. He plays the guitar reasonably well, and he likes cricket far too much.
there's no far too much in cricket. As an Indian, it's almost your duty to love that sport, to know about it since the time you're born.
Hockey, man, I thought that was our national sport.
It is, but ask anyone on the street, you'll get a much better idea of what sport people really watch.
As long as you don't ask me.
I stopped watching cricket the moment India lost at Lord's to Duckworth Lewis, and I really wanted to curse everyone. Like, fuck, man, how the hell do you know whether India is going to lose or not? I can't predict your future. How the hell can you predict a match? That day I quit watching cricket.
I would say curling. Curling is so fantastic. Nothing goes on. It's so much fun.
Is that sport?
Yeah. It's an Olympic level sport.
Did anybody watch WrestleMania today morning?
Oh shit, that was today. No.
Wasn't it behind closed doors?
Yeah. It's a two-parter. It's a two-parter, right? Yep. Oh dude, the Undertaker versus AJ Styles match, it was so much cringe, but it was so fucking good. The best thing I've seen in wrestling in years.
AJ Styles I've been following since TNA, and what a fucking phenomenal wrestler, man. That guy can move.
The only wrestling thing I saw was the Last Week Tonight thing last year, where he just did a brutal takedown of the whole industry, right? And I mean, come on, there's nothing else going on, and wrestling is still, I mean, it's behind closed doors, but they're still holding matches, so
that tells you a lot. Okay, enough of sports. Yash, like, since this is probably like, for you, this is probably the biggest change. How about you start off with, you know, how are you coping up with the lockdown and the change in work situation and just being alone at home all the time?
So when this all really started, I didn't really take it too well, right? I mean, because it was a bit of a change that no one was really prepared for. And a lot of us were caught unaware. But as time went, I'm talking as a professional right now, in the sense how we've dealt with it as a company. We realized that people aren't really going out and buying phones right now due to multiple reasons. So we figured the best way to actually deal with our communities and expanding our communities would be to engage with people as opposed to, pushing our product out in the market more. So I think that's a realization that a lot of companies have come to during this phase. So I think you'll be seeing a lot more engagement-led communication from various brands. So that's how we are also dealing with it. As for me, I have taken to a couple of different things. I mean, as Harish just mentioned, I love playing the guitar, but I'm not really good at it. He said that. I'm not really good at it though. besides that, there's a couple of pending books that had been lying around. So they're out now. By the way, I have a really nice recommendation for you guys in case you haven't read it and everyone else listening to this podcast. It's called Made in Japan. It's a story of a great brand we call Sony. So do check that out.
Oh, sweet.
Nice.
Love
yeah,
to check
that
it out, man.
Sounds like something right up my alley.
Yeah. I remember reading Console Wars with the Sega versus Nintendo.
Yeah, that was a good book.
Yeah, Harish, you're right. Stop thinking. You're right.
What?
You were like confused whether am I right or not.
Yeah, we were talking about Sony and then I'm like, wait, that doesn't talk about Sony. But anyway, I'm glad you brought up communities, Yash, because that's one of the things we were going to talk about. If you talk about brands in India, from the very beginning, they focused on community feedback as being like one of their core tenets. So where do you think the community fits in today's digital age where everything's basically shifting to online? So it's harder to get that sort of feedback that you guys rely on. So where do you think that fits in now?
I would say that it's a very crucial pillar for any consumer-led, consumer-facing market. So as for B2B companies, that would probably not matter as much because they have very direct relations with the kind of people, the kind of clients that are using their product. But for a consumer-facing brand like ours, I think it's super important to be engaging with this community, to listening to them. Because not only for the feedback that we get, I mean, if you look at our products, they are actually shaped by community and it's not just something that we just say it for the sake of it. So there is product feedback. And the second thing is it also helps you differentiate your community, your company from the clutter, right? I mean, with hardware getting commoditized, there are only so many things left that will allow you to stand out. So community is definitely one of those things. So multiple benefits of engaging and developing a community that's constructive.
Yeah, that's a good point you make there, Yash. But I'd like to get some thoughts on, you know, there's a lot of brands which are who are trying to build a community around a product or, you know, as a second thought. Let's just put it like that. But then you've got Poco, which at least from an outside perspective, it seems to be a very community-driven brand, as in the community is what essentially helps shape the product pipeline or, you know, the brand identity and language. These are two very different approaches towards a very similar outcome. What's your take on that? And what kind of insights did you guys have that, you know, helped shape Poco become this kind of a brand?
Okay, that's an interesting one. I think why it is a very core factor behind Poco's daily operations is also to do with the kind of reasons why Poco was built in the first place. So all of us at Poco right now come from Xiaomi, and Xiaomi has had a very strong focus on community since the start. But for us, I think we like to take it a level ahead, a step further with... I mean, we don't have as many products to deal with, which gives us more time to talk to our communities. So that way we are able to be community first as opposed to the afterthought approach that you mentioned. So that really helps us because we have that much more time. Having spent, 2018 was the first Poco. We're in April of 2020, a year and a half, or more than that. Having spent almost 2 years as Poco in the market, we have come to realize the importance of it. It just goes beyond the user base, right? I mean, if you noticed recently, we teamed up with XDA, and that's because of the community they have, and we see a lot of intersection in the kind of people that would be interested in developing stuff for Poco and the kind of community they have. So, so that's why it makes a lot of sense for us to be community first rather than just having that as an afterthought.
You know, as you mentioned that, you know, you have to be community first. Recently, I think Mr. Manmohan did a live video conference sort of a thing with the Poco fans. Of course, that was the first thing, first kind of a situation we've seen since quarantine was announced. But from these video conferencing directly with the fans, are there things that you learn from them that you could implement in your strategies, and things that you could expand on? And did you think that conference was an effective way to communicate?
So 3 points on that. Number one, yes, absolutely, we learn things as to what people really want. Number two, we were actually surprised to see the level of interest. For people to just come and listen to us, it wasn't as if we were going to break any news. It wasn't as if we were going to run a contest. It was just a chat that fans would have with us. And it was so encouraging to see. I think we had more than 250 people show up. So that's something that was really encouraging for us. And number three is the kind of behavior that people show during these times, right? These are unprecedented times. We don't know how people or communities react during this time. So that was a bit of a litmus test as well, if you ask me. It was a pilot for sure. So that has given us a lot of insight. It's not just about hearing them as to what they want. It's also important for us to understand how they react during these times. So engagement is what we're looking at. And that video call that we had with fans was a clear proof of concept.
Interesting. I see Poco doing things a little bit differently from Xiaomi. So how has that transition been for you? What's different switching away from the mothership, as it were, to a smaller, more nimble unit? What are you able to do better or more effectively by being at Poco?
For starters, we are a much smaller team, right? So idea to execution is very short with the kind of team that we have. It's also a very agile team, so it's not... the size of Xiaomi is very different from the size of Poco, like you just mentioned. But due to that, we are able to move faster. We are able to take decisions that can be risky, deemed risky for a brand like Xiaomi, for example. So it allows us to be a lot more experimentative in all of our aspects, from marketing to community to communications to even product. The Poco X2, it was a bit of an experimentative product, right? There was no phone in the market with a 120Hz display, and we didn't know if people would understand what that even means. I mean, of course, there are you guys who helped dumb that down for everyone to make it very easy to understand, but then it was still a risk, and I think it made a lot of sense for Poco to do it, as time tells us now.
As hardware features go, that was pretty easy to dumb down. More refresh, fast screen, smooth everywhere.
No, but funny enough, there was a lot of confusion between frames per second and refresh rate. I mean, content
and
hardware.
Let me tell you one thing. It's not only fans. I'm not going to take names, but even sometimes we have to explain it to our colleagues from the industry. Yeah. So I'm not going
to... I'm not really surprised, to be honest.
But I have a very offbeat question for you. Mm-hmm. With the Poco F1 launch, I had no idea how big that phone was because I was away for my honeymoon, and all of a sudden I was completely off the grid, and I come back and everyone's talking about that phone. And I'm like, what the hell is this? I come back home, I set it up, and I saw what it actually was. But my question is that since then, the Poco F2 has been an internet mystery, right? And what I want to ask you is, how many times have people bugged you about that phone, about the F2,
How many times a day do they bug you?
Every Xiaomi representative, when they tweet something, the second or third tweet has been Poco F2 launching.
It is. I think I retweeted something from Yuval Noah Harari the other day, who's one of my favorite authors of all time. And there was a couple of people asking, ki, Poco F2 kab aayega? So it's not really a bad problem to have. When we spun out in January, like, it's a great problem to have, right? When we spun out in January, I think one of the things that Manu had on his mind was to offload these questions to another bunch of people. So it's a boon and a bane. I mean, it is hard for us to kind of convince people to look at what we are putting out on the market right now. At times, it took us some time to actually get people to concentrate on Poco X2. Because all they wanted was the F2. And this phone wasn't really NF2. So we had to rename it as the X2. So yeah, it's a boon and a bane. As to how many questions we get on a daily basis, I think we really don't have the means to keep a count on that.
I'm pretty sure Hugo Barra is sitting somewhere in California and looking at his comments, and they're all just about Xiaomi still.
He's like, haha, I ran away from this shit.
So while we're on the topic of the F2, I'd like to segue from there. You know, it ties into my earlier question about the communities bit as well. How do you manage community expectations? You know, when you have a group of people who are so vocal about your brand, and a brand which is so open to listening to the communities, the demands can get a little over the top, you know.
Yes.
I don't entirely recall what... Okay, I think the F1 launched, say, around 20,000, approximately 22,000.
Yeah,
approximately.
21. Started at 20,999.
Yeah. Without getting into specifics or whatever, you know, it might not be actually feasible to build a product like that today with equivalent, you know, modern specs at that price point, hypothetically speaking. Or it might be, I don't know, that's up to you guys. How do you manage those expectations? Because suppose inevitably the price goes up by a fair amount or whatever, you know, people want a whole bunch of features. People have been asking OnePlus for waterproofing for the longest time, and they just haven't been able to deliver that. So how do you manage those expectations, especially as a brand which is so open to listening to that feedback? How do you pick and choose what to prioritize, or, you know, think about it like, this is something that we just cannot do right now. Maybe we'll revisit a couple of years down the line.
Okay. So whether or not a phone like that is possible right now, it certainly is possible, right? It's so how we look at it is as a product manager, how a product manager would look at it would be an assembly of components. And a Poco F1 of 2020, I don't know what it would have. But it's certainly possible. But again, there have been, there's a different context now that there's the COVID situation, which has put so much pressure on supply chain, memory prices going up and all of that, the INR falling badly against the USD because all of the transactions with suppliers happen in the US dollar. So that's one thing. But as for the possibility of a phone like that, it's certainly possible. But then again, you need a lot of R&D might. Right now, back in 2018, when we were a part of Xiaomi, we could afford a lot more R&D. Right now that we've spun off, we don't have that kind of a luxury. So, and as to managing expectations, I think it's important for a brand to keep conveying what they stand for, right? I mean, we probably won't make a phone that's a lakh and a half with no buttons anywhere. And stuff like that. We stand for something, and we have to make sure that we convey that in as frequently as possible. So there will be people who will be disappointed, and you have to just live with that. You can't make everyone happy at the same time. So we've come to that realization, and we are okay with the fact that there are going to be people who will be disappointed. But at the same time, you stick to what you really have, you know, stood for, what you really have in your ethos.
Pretty cool. So, does that mean we'll see the Poco F2 next week?
Next week sounds a little unlikely. I knew that question was coming, but...
Poco F2 when?
That question is going to follow you wherever you go, no matter what.
I know. So, the luxury with you guys is that I can just, you know... talk in a language that I can't talk to the others. I'll probably just let you know after this podcast is over what I really mean.
Basically, Harish is saying stop asking that question now.
In a very rude manner.
Okay, so you mentioned something about taking risky decisions, right? When I hear that, I basically think of a phone with a flamethrower at the back.
So, that's probably something Elon Musk would want to do.
Poco flamethrower too.
Yeah, the F is for flamethrower.
Yeah, we should get on a call with Elon Musk and do something like that, right?
Yeah, smoke some joints.
Yeah, he's going to do that on that radio show, right?
Yeah.
What's his face again? Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
So, what's some of the riskier stuff that you can probably pull off at, say, Poco, that doesn't get probably as much mainstream attention, where you have the ability to actually pull off something risky and say, we were able to do this, probably not on a Redmi because, well, that gets like tens of millions of sales. So you have that agility. So what, is there anything that you'd consider doing on a Poco phone?
So I think it, the decisions that you take that might have a bit of risk involved could be either product decisions or they could be marketing or communications decisions. On the product front, we've already done that with a 120 Hertz display. On the communications and marketing front, I would say that without getting into too much detail, there was a Do the Math campaign that we ran in December, I think, of 2018. I'm sure you guys would remember that. And besides that, we've been fairly vocal as a brand as to, you know, what we really want to convey without beating around the bush. So yeah, these are things that we consider risky, and I don't think bigger brands can pull that off. Maybe we get that brick someday, but I think we'll stick to this.
Yeah, I think the X2 launch was like, we're coming out guns blazing.
I mean, that's not just to, it's not just to put the message out as to what we are saying, but it's also a part of shaping up your brand's persona. So yeah, that was a big leap in terms of how people look at us.
Cool. One more thing about the crazy launch cycle that we have in India is that we're flooded with leaks weeks and months ahead of a phone's launch. Mm-hmm. And you've been pretty vocal about it in the past. And I know you have some thoughts on this. How do leaks affect a phone's launch cycle? Is it good for the brand because, hey, you're getting free publicity? Mm-hmm. Is it bad because there's no mystery left by the time a phone launches? So what's your take?
Okay, hand on my heart, I would say that the leaks haven't really hurt us as much. But, I mean, right now I'm talking as Yash. I'm not talking as someone who works at Poco. So they haven't really hurt us as much because, like you said, any publicity is publicity. And we were kind of, we didn't mind that publicity that came to us. So that said, I don't think this would be the case forever. I mean, already since Jan to April, we've become a much larger brand with a lot more awareness. So I don't think we'd want that to happen again. Like you said, right? I mean, there's no mystery. And whenever there is a story that you have, you would want to be the ones to tell the consumers, the media, the community, your story. You don't really want a third party coming in and spoiling it for you. So, I mean, fingers crossed, I hope that doesn't happen again.
Oh, that's wishful thinking, man.
I know. With access to Weibo and stuff like that, I think there's so many leaksters out there putting so much effort to get stuff out. So yeah, wishful thinking, but we wish nonetheless.
Yeah. Is there anything unique to India in terms of challenges? Because it is a crazy market judging by the sheer number of launches we get a year.
Okay. So there's a lot unique to India, right? One is the average selling price. It's slightly lower than, let's say, China. What that means is that to differentiate amongst competition, it makes it all that harder because you have lesser to play with. So that's a challenge. But then again, that also leads to some really ingenious products at times. So I am of the firm belief that you really don't need to spend a bomb on a phone now. The times are past when there used to be some good phones and a lot of bad phones. Pretty much every phone that's coming out is pretty darn good now.
That's true, absolutely. Yeah.
They're actually so good that sometimes we get bored, man. We like, we need some bad phones to throw us off, and that does not happen.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's the result of commoditization, and number two, people really realizing what the market wants. It's not really, it's not the same as 5 years back.
Yeah, Yash, I think like you would also agree over here that, I mean, this it's all the more important for a brand or a phone to stand out in a unique way. Like say in the case of the X2, it was the 120Hz display.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the most part, phones are getting commoditized, like you said. There's just a lot of similar stuff out there,
mm-hmm.
which makes it all the more important that, you know, you have a unique selling point or a unique story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, while with the X2, we saw the 120Hz display, like maybe for our audience, maybe as journalists, we still get like, you know, what you're trying to go with Poco. Maybe for our audience, you could reiterate, like, what's the story behind Poco? And like, what is it that you're really aiming for as a brand?
Okay, we've set out to do good things. We've set out to live up to the ethos that we've started this brand with, which is everything you need, nothing you don't. And like you rightly mentioned, markets changed a lot in the last 5 years or so. Now to stand out, it's all the more difficult because on a product level, there's hardly much that you can do. I mean, there are obviously things like the 120Hz display or, you know, design decisions like moving a fingerprint scanner to the side, stuff like that. But besides that, there are also so many other aspects to a business that you can leverage to stand out. These could be things like affordability schemes, right? I mean, EMI options, partnering with, let's say, a Bajaj FinServ or an Axis Bank. Flipkart, we had Flipkart, so Flipkart serves so many PIN codes that it automatically increases your availability throughout the nation. A couple other things could be software updates, for example, and the thing that we keep harping on, the community. So differentiating isn't just the assembly of products, the assembly of components, but also the business as a whole, the company as a whole, the brand image as a whole. And of course, then there's the communication and basically the brand persona that you build through your conversations with the consumers and the media and everyone else.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is also another interesting one for you. As
why
Poco...
are you grinning? But should I be worried?
Huh?
You're grinning. Should I be worried?
Hey, I've been drinking, so I'm allowed to grin.
Okay. Go on.
Yeah. Okay. So, as... Shit, now you got me all...
I think the listeners of this podcast should know that we are on video and can see each other's faces and probably know a bit more about what he's going to talk.
Though we tried it without video a long mm-hmm. time, like in the early days, and it didn't really work out because we couldn't see, you know, get more like visual feedback with each other.
Right.
So this
I see the I see the
value.
I actually just asked Harish a little while back before we started the podcast if it's going to be video or not. So I'm kind of glad it is video. I can see that grin.
Yeah.
I like how Dhruv says, you know, in the early days, as if, you know, we were doing this for years. You know, it's
Stone
been hundreds
age.
Of episodes.
But it does feel like that, right? I mean, I remember the first week after we recorded, I had to go out for like this Zomato carnival thing that was in Hyderabad. And it was huge. There was like 2,000, 3,000 folks there. And we ended up eating a lot of food. And I look back at that and it's just 2 months ago. Look how much things have changed.
The definition of BC has changed. It's now before COVID.
I think, Harish, it feels like a long time because we've been planning this for like a year and a half, 2 years. And we finally went through with it because, you know, we were like, fuck it, let's just talk about stuff we normally talk about. And, you know, when we're traveling, all three of us. So, yeah, I guess it finally fell through. But I think that's why it feels so long.
Yeah, yeah. Also, yeah. Harish, I think you should cut out that PC joke that I think Dhruv made. I don't think the audience is going to appreciate that too much.
Wait, what joke?
Dhruv, you mind reiterating that?
The definition of BC, before COVID.
I don't think he knows. Do you know what it said means, right? You've been to Delhi enough times to know that.
Oh, sure, I have. I actually...
I'm asking Harish.
Oh, okay.
Is there something other than the actual definition
what?
That I'm...
No, I was talking about BC and AD.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about that BC, Akshay.
So Akshay, there's an interesting anecdote that you should hear. This one time then, I think this was during the time we came to Delhi to show you guys the Poco X2. It was Manmohan and myself. And as you know, Manmohan is known as Mancho. So at this shawarma shop at the Delhi airport, I placed my order and Manmohan walked off. I just asked him, Mancho, is there something that you want to order? The store guy, I don't know what he heard, but I think I also know what he heard.
You are right.
He took a double take and he again asked me, what is that guy's name again? I just grinned. I left it there.
It's a very Punjabi way to say what he thought you said. So I think that's why he was like, what the hell is he saying? What the hell is he calling his friend in front of everyone and he's okay with it? I think that's what caught him off guard.
Right.
Yeah. I have no idea what's going on. But anyway, Dhruv, you had a funny question. Wait, you had a question.
I had a question which wasn't necessarily funny, but I'm going to go with it anyway. Because I'm grinning. Okay, so in the year and a half or so for Poco, you had 2 phone launches. Like,
that's right.
2, just 2.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Xiaomi is flooding the market. Samsung is flooding the market. Literally everybody's flooding the market. These are 2 very different approaches once again. Mm-hmm. Do you think the right idea is to strike a balance somewhere in between? What is really the right approach here? Because we are tired of trying out phones. The audience is tired of having a new option every week because they can't decide what to buy anymore. Like, every phone is a good phone, like you said. Something has one feature which is better, while another might have another feature which is better, but right. It's not a drastic difference. Does flooding the market even make sense today?
Okay, I don't think there is a right way or a wrong way. I think in the end, the market is right. I mean, there will only be as many launches as the market can take. So that way, I think there is no right or wrong. But then again, the dynamics of the market are such that certain brands or certain companies can't be left. They can't really be not doing things, right? It's very important to keep launching phones for a certain brands because that's what people actually want. There might be a bunch of people who will seem tired of so many launches, but the reason that this is happening, and I agree that the average number of launches per quarter has gone up by a huge margin in the last three or four years. But that's also only because the market can sustain that and the market probably also wants that. It wouldn't have sustained for so long otherwise.
So let me add another bit to that. Now we are coming to a point where, say, some of the higher end variants of, suppose a phone that starts at 12,000 rupees, the higher end variants, which is essentially usually more RAM and storage, is intersecting with the entry level variants of a higher end phone, which might have a little less storage, but it might have a better processor.
Right.
Is that not confusing for the customer? Like, how are they supposed to make up their mind?
It's absolutely confusing. Like, let's say you have a budget of X rupees and there's a 6GB RAM version of phone 1 and there's a 4GB RAM version of phone 2 with, let's say, a better camera. But then again, as a consumer as well, people as consumers are also getting so much more aware as to what they want. Is it performance? I mean, it started out with a decent performance, then people started asking for better battery, then they started asking for better camera. Now it's a lot more than that. So people are actually aware of what they really want. But I agree with you, it can be confusing at times. But then again, what brands are also very smartly doing is segregating their sales strategy, for example. So the higher end phone that you mentioned could probably be more offline focused, whereas the higher variant of the lower end phone could be more online focused. So on a product level, there's a huge difference. The only intersection is the pricing, which can cause confusion, I agree. But then there are enough points of separation between these two phones that will allow people to actually make a clear decision. And then again, there is so much help from blogs, publications, and YouTube that it's really not that difficult to make a purchase decision in this market anymore.
So, to me, as somebody who goes through a lot of phones, it really comes across as that the brand is trying to upsell the customer. You know, hey, you've already spent 14,000 or 15,000 rupees. You might as well at this point, you know, spend another 1,000 rupees and get another variant of the phone. And it's just like a constant upsell. Do you think that's a valid take?
I'm pretty sure a lot of brands are doing that. But then again, I don't blame them as well, because that's the nature of business, right? You want to increase your revenues. And it's so from a market standpoint, it's very much the same effort that you're putting in selling a 15K phone versus the 17K phone, for example. So you might as well do that. That, I think, is only fair when you are honest with that upselling. I mean, it's not wrong to upsell, but to be unrealistic with your promises is wrong. And I don't think phone makers can pull that off anyway these days.
Mm-hmm. I actually have a question not related to market, but more related to the current situation. Now, since the country has been under lockdown, Poco has been known for supporting their phones throughout the life cycle of it. In fact, F1 has been still getting support.
Right.
But now the dynamics have changed. Everyone's working from home. So how is the continued support going on for the two devices out there? Are people able to contribute working from home? Of course, it will be not as fast or as quick as it was before. But now, since you're working from home, how is the support for the phones going?
And just to tack on to that question, as somebody who's been in the industry, like, what kind of effects do you foresee on hardware timelines as well? There's got to be some effect. Do you expect some devices to be canned, pushed back? And, you know, this is going to have long-term repercussions as well. So how does this all work together?
Okay. As to what Akshay said, right, for Poco F1, we actually just released the Android 10 update. Obviously, this lockdown has affected us, but the beauty for us in this is that we have a section of the software team in China as well. So when the lockdown happened in China, they weren't really affected by it as much as we were. And that's because they were already prepared with surplus inventory, or let's say, I mean, the inventory doesn't matter to us because we make our phones in India, but they were prepared for a week of downtime because the Chinese New Year was coinciding with it. So that coincidence has really helped in that case. As for software updates, it's business as usual. There might be a couple of delays in the sense that testing that happens can be delayed because of the situation. Software-wise, I think it should be business as usual for most companies out there. As to what Dhruv mentioned, right, I don't know about projects being cancelled, but I do see things getting pushed. The only reason being, I mean, we've already seen so many phone launches already getting delayed. It's not really a great time to be launching phones. I mean, as a brand as well, you have to show some empathy because you feel that empathy. So it's not a great time to be launching phones, both as a model and as the market dictates. In that case, I don't know if phones will be cancelled, launches will be cancelled. No one really knows how long this lockdown will last. There are talks of another lockdown happening after this one ends, because obviously one lockdown of 21 days cannot just end the spread of the virus, as I'm sure you guys would agree.
Yeah, especially as the numbers are growing at this point.
Yeah. So you never really know, man. I don't know how this is going to go. We'll just have to wait and watch.
Cool. In that case, we will get you on probably, well, we were going to get you on again in time for the F2 launch and talk about the phone and stuff. But if everything shut down and the economy tanks, we'll have you on and then you can serenade us with some sweet, sweet songs.
But there are a few things that you can actually tell our listeners who probably want to be a blogger or a YouTuber or something, you know. Some tips that, obviously, we've given our tips, but we've given tips from our side. You're on the other side. You know, sometimes people don't understand what brands look for when they are looking for some form of support, as you know, with review units or information or access. You know, whether a YouTuber or a journalist or even a blogger for that matter. What kind of tips would you give these guys? Because not everyone knows where to start.
I mean, to be honest, I think all three of you, I think you guys are way better positioned to answer that question. But as someone from the other side, I mean, I can speak for Poco. We are super, super open to interacting with people, as I think pretty much the entire industry knows. As to how we decide on review units, for example, it's really not as quantitative as some might think. It's really not about how many hits your website gets or how many views your YouTube channel gets or how many subscribers you have, but it's a lot more qualitative. So obviously the publication will matter. What will matter more in certain cases is the market understanding, the experience of the journalist or the blogger or the YouTuber. So it's really a combination of all of these factors. There is no real algorithm that runs. Obviously, it also helps to know, it obviously helps if the journalist has been around for a while and, you know, you already have a relationship with them. Because obviously the history of a publication, there are publications that are really, they are fixated on certain ideas which you might or might not agree with. So all of that really matters. But I don't really think that there is any algorithm that anyone can crack. And obviously there are you guys who are much better positioned to answer this.
Yeah, I think for YouTubers, I think a point that we've reiterated in the past is that there's a multitude of content that's going on. A lot of it is just focused on repeating spec sheets and, you know, just sticking to the basics. But there are a lot of kids out there who are doing informative pieces, you know, trying to actually get into it. Right. And I'm assuming that plays a big factor in how you build a relationship with an upcoming YouTuber as well. If the guy's got a unique approach a way at looking at things, that's probably more important to you as a brand than just another kid repeating a spec sheet.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, when you look at channels like Rev Atlas, I mean, Sandeep is brilliant with what he does. You look at Techno Ruhez, he's not just huge, but he also has a very interesting point of view on a lot of things. And then there are channels like Track in Tech with Arun. So it's all very beautiful where all of these people have something more to add. It's not just, let's say, reiteration of a spec sheet or reading out of a press release. There is some value that's being added, right? And that's what people come for. So I absolutely agree with what you said, Dhruv. It really matters as to how you add value to what's already existing. Harish, what about your YouTube channel though? When is that happening?
Oh my god, I don't even know.
I mean, I remember talking to you about that, I think, a year back or so.
Beijing.
In Beijing,
yeah. Yeah, we talked about it.
He was, I think, a couple of beers down by that point.
Yeah, interesting.
Which explains it.
We'll have to see. Again, it's all about adding value, right? What do I have to bring to the table when there's like 800 million guys who are going to, who already have the content? So it's about figuring out what it is that I want to do. And that makes all the difference, right? Even when I see YouTube, it's about, I know what the industry is all about, but I want something that I am not able to provide. So that's why I see stuff where there's like a detailed breakdown, not of a phone per se, but in areas where I may not know as much. Right. So that's the value add here.
I mean, that said, I'm really looking forward to seeing you on camera.
It's going to be an absolute shit show.
I think we all are looking forward to
it. It's going to be entertainment at its best.
Yeah. Sure. I should buy a flamethrower and do like a flamethrower test. That'll be my unique.
That's why it's going to be entertainment. Just don't burn your beard by mistake.
Oh my god. Yeah. That was a lot of interesting points. Thanks for coming on, Yash. And, well, we are going to have you on again at some point later down the line.
Absolute pleasure to be here, man. Nice to see your faces. Nice to see you guys are chilling hard in the lockdown. See you next time, man.
It's work as usual
safe,
for man. Us, man.
Cheers.
Stay
cheers.
Safe.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Bye.
All right, that was a lot of great insight from Yash, and we'll have him on at a later date once Poco announces the F2. Now we'll switch gears and talk about a phone that's launching close in a few weeks' time, and it is a subject that we've talked about often during the last few weeks, and it, as always, it is the OnePlus 8.
Yeah.
So, we've heard this week that the phone is launching on April 14th, and we also got a follow-up with a DisplayMate certification saying that the phones have picked up DisplayMate's A+ rating, and they've also picked up an award from them saying that the OnePlus 8 series is the best smartphone display. So that's pretty interesting, and I wanted to talk about that in detail because for the longest time in the last 4 years, Samsung has been the king of the display market, right? Any phone, anytime they come out with a new phone in the Galaxy series, it sets the bar for the industry as such. But OnePlus has clearly stated its intent on changing the status quo. So let's see how that plays out. What do you guys think? Do you think OnePlus is able to overtake Samsung in this area?
It'll have a good display, and I don't really care about display weight rating because like literally every second phone which comes out gets like a crazy rating either on DisplayMate or DxOMark. We know what happens with DxOMark. Yeah. Yeah,
I'll be very honest, even with the 7T Pro or 7 Pro, they had a DisplayMate thing with that as well. And I have the Note 10 at home, so they're both 2019 phones, and it's not a better screen than the Note 10 screen. So I really don't give a damn what DisplayMate is saying. I have my own eyes to believe, and I have the Ultra at home, S20 Ultra. So the moment I get my hands on one of the OnePlus 8 phones, I can instantly know whether it's better or not. So sure, it's a great PR stunt
move,
by
yeah.
OnePlus, but in my opinion, there's no chance OnePlus screens are even come close to what Samsung can make. And I think that's going to remain the same in 2020 as well.
Yeah, it's even interesting to see them go after the display thing because they're sourcing their panels from Samsung. It's not like they're getting something else. They're using AMOLED panels made by Samsung on their phones. Sure, they may be able to bring their own take on the tuning side of things. But I find it highly unlikely that somebody else can take that crown from Samsung.
It'll definitely come close, but I don't think they can beat the S20 or S20.
Yeah,
Ultra.
I mean, I have no doubts that it's going to be a great display. It will be. It'll have the 120Hz refresh rate, and it'll just be a good screen. I don't see why they need to make such a huge... Well, okay, I see the... Well, now that you mentioned it, I see the PR value on it.
PR value and the marketing value, man. It's huge, man.
Yeah, we're all talking about it, and... Yeah, that's the thing these guys excel at, right? Every OnePlus has done this for the last 3-4 years. They get down to the minutia, and then they're able to deliver something out of it. Like, how often do we talk about DisplayMate when it comes to any other phone? But then with OnePlus, there's that excitement that, oh my God, they're doing something. And they've been able to do that consistently. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting. I don't know. I think it's going to be an interesting phone. And from the leaks that we've had so far, it suggests that it looks like it's going to be very similar to the Find X2 Pro. So
yeah.
The point of differentiation comes down to the software side of things. And
I am not
area,
happy, though, with the lack of the pop-up camera. At least that's what the rumors suggest. I want that pop-up camera back.
Although, I did a story as well that, I mean... Granted, these problems are unique to each of us, but my main problem is like, how the hell are they going to get these phones to people? I did a story on it. Like, I mean, there's no way for them to deliver these products anywhere in the world right now. Maybe in the US.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. Not anywhere in the world. I think they will be able to sell it in the UK, parts of the UK and the US, because the US, for reasons I still don't understand, is not in a nationwide lockdown. So everything is working just fine there.
Three lakh cases, that's still running business as usual. That's just weird, man.
Economy, capitalism, yay.
But for them, their main market is India. That's where they earn most of their money. That's where they recover their investment from. And being their primary market, India being the primary market, and they won't be able to, well, they'll be able to sell it, but they won't be able to ship out these products. And by the time it reaches their consumers, the value of the phone itself may just drop because then they have another phone coming in a few months.
Yeah, that's...
So I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, I don't get that at all because India sees over, what, two-thirds of their... Wait, no, one-third. Over 33-35% of all sales come from India. So that market is just not available to them at launch.
That's massive. And with these phones are not going to be particularly affordable. I mean, there will be maybe one affordable model, but the flagship level phones, the really expensive one, the 8 Pro, that's a huge investment and they need to recover that cost.
True. And Dhruv, you were talking about that motorized module. I was actually talking to the Oppo guys after the Find X2 launch and I asked them the same thing because last year with the first gen Find X, there was that module that had the front and back cameras. So I was like, where is that? And then they said that this year they wanted to prioritize water resistance and there was no way for them to put that in and still have like an IP rating. So you win some, you lose some.
Yeah, but I don't really go, nobody really goes swimming with their phone. It's the reasonable water splash resistance that they already have is good enough. Like I like that full screen experience, like the completely unhindered display.
Didn't they say with the OnePlus 7 or 7 series that it's sort of like IP67, but we're just not giving it a rating because...
Yeah, they did. They did,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, because the cost goes up when you have to get your phones tested for this certification, right? So, in a way, they said that it's IP67 rated, but they just didn't bother with the certification.
But that's a funny story. All they did instead was buy a bucket of water. I mean, buy a bucket and then filled water.
I don't think anyone buys a bucket of water, man.
Not yet. I'm thinking about the future, okay? Who knows a
but
year
you're talking
from
about
now.
The past.
We're talking about phones. Next year, this time, the podcast will be about
okay,
where
let's,
you can
let's,
find...
You never know. There might be a situation where people are actually buying buckets of water. That will be the end
next
of
year, I'll
time.
Have to write a post. Where can you buy a bucket of water? Please let it not come to that. Anyway.
There'll be a flash sale for that.
Oh my god. Okay.
But I really want this phone to be good and I have a feeling it might be. I just hope it's not like riddled with problems like the 7T had, especially in the software front at launch and they fixed it later. I just want it to work out of the box. But with the COVID situation right now, I honestly don't know whether it will be or not. You never know. Some things can go wrong in the very last minute. And I mean, apart from the displays and the way the phone looks, we almost know everything. But the software experience should be, you know, just as good as the way it is on the 7 series and 7T Pro series. At least at launch. That's what I want.
Yeah. It's turning out to be an interesting phone. And it looks like we may see as many as 3 this year. So let's see how that plays out. Thankfully, not a whole lot of time to wait. It's just 8 days away.
Yeah.
Or 9 days away. Or next week, based on when you're listening to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dhruv, what do you want... What do you think will make the OnePlus 8 Pro stand out?
I mean, to be fair, I found the OnePlus 7T Pro to be a ridiculously good phone. They can just go up from here. I would like a slightly better camera, which the rumors suggest is going to be the case. I really like that seafoam green, that green color that the leaks have.
Yeah.
That looks really nice. But other than that, like, it's for me, it's going to be a bit of an iterative update. I think somebody who's already got the 70 or even the 7 for that matter doesn't necessarily need to upgrade because while the 865 is better, it's not a generational leap as such. Like, you're not gaining that much in power. There's nothing on Android that's consuming that much power. And generally speaking, I think it's just the little things that are getting me excited about the 8 Pro. It's not, you know, I'm interested in the design, the color, maybe a bit of the camera improvements, but that's about it, really.
I want two things, man. I mean, I agree with Dhruv that the camera has to be really good. If the camera is really good, you're giving a good reason for people to upgrade, even from the 7 series for that matter, because if that's a huge leap, that is. Just for the camera, for people who like photography. Otherwise, you really don't need to. The second thing that I really want the phone to be good at is basically just be a lighter phone. The 7T and the 7 series, the Pro variants at least, were little bit on the heavy side. Of course, my hands got used to it and I'm fine now. But now that they don't have the motorized camera sensor that pops up, it can be a lighter phone. And if it is a lighter phone, I feel it's going to be just a perfect version of the 70 Pro, in my opinion, apart from the pop-up camera.
Yeah, I think that's going to play a big role. Getting rid of that motorized slider, if that's true, it should certainly be a lighter phone. And in fact, I think all three of us had issue with that when we first started using the phone. Though we did get used to it, but yeah, I think it was 210 grams or so, just a bit too heavy for all of us.
The reason why we found it heavy was because the moment we got the 7 Pro, the three of us traveled to Beijing, was it? Beijing, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we were traveling with the phone, like, within the very first few days of the phone, just set it up literally and just traveled. I think that's why we felt it, because we were constantly walking at the airport or elsewhere, and we felt how heavy it was. Maybe that's why.
Almost dropped my pants.
Yeah, I'm glad your pants didn't fall off, actually.
Yeah, but I mean, I was wearing a belt, thankfully. But yeah, I mean, if I didn't have a belt, trust me, the pants would have gone off, and I would be mooning Beijing. Involuntarily, but yeah,
and you made a really valid point there, Dhruv, in terms of it not being a generational upgrade, because I was going back and using some of the older OnePlus phones for an article I'm doing, and even the 5T, the 5 and 5T series just hold up just fine in 2020. I mean, there's nothing missing from them. Sure, the camera is not great when you talk about the kind of phones that we have now. But in terms of day-to-day usage, in terms of actual real-world performance, there's really not much that is still missing from them. And they've held up incredibly well.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, right, the camera differences really stand out when you're putting them next to a current-gen phone. It's not as if the cameras are bad as they stand. They'll take a perfectly serviceable photograph. It's just that only when you compare them to, say, a 2020 phone or a 2019 phone, do you start actually feeling, you know, that, okay, maybe it's not as good as it could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, just installing Gcam and you can see what the sensor is capable of. So it's not like the sensors or the hardware is bad. It's just the software optimization that these guys need to do.
Yeah.
Ain't that always the case?
Anyway, we'll obviously have a lot more to talk about OnePlus next week, so stay tuned. And now we shall shift gears and talk about something that I really don't know that much about, gaming. Akshay, you seem really interested in this Resident Evil 3 remake. Why should we care?
So this was the game last week that I mentioned that I can't talk about, and I was currently reviewing Resident Evil 3 remake. And I don't know if people played the original one in the PS1 days. It's an action horror game. It's not as scary as Resident Evil 2 remake. But I just had a lot of fun playing this game. And in my review, I wrote that while the game looks beautiful, it has its moments. It just wasn't long enough. It was just, you can finish that game in 6 hours. And for Resident Evil fans, that could be a disappointment because, some people argue it could have been a DLC update to the previous game. But regardless, I still had a lot of fun with that game. And I finally finished Astral Chain yesterday.
Wait, the remake is the single player story is just 6 hours?
Yes, it's just 6 hours. I mean, to be honest, it's a remake of the original game, but it does have its own few additions. And the original story had a lot of quirky stuff in it. A lot of basically Capcom trimmed the fat this time around from the stories. That's why it's 6 hours. It could have been longer, but then again, I can understand why they cut down on some parts of the story because it just didn't make any sense or it didn't fit. Sure, it was funny as hell, or sometimes it's just something that you can enjoy apart from the main story of the game. But in this case, I understand why they cut out the annoying parts. And that's why it cut the story to 6 hours. If you really want to play this game 100%, I would say maximum 10 to 11 hours. Having said that, the game has a lot of you can replay the game a lot, in fact. And you can do speed runs, you can do challenges like knife only or whatever. So replayability factor is huge on this game. The only difference is it's a short game, and once you start replaying the game, you'll be done in 4 hours if you know what you're doing.
Is it like a full price game? $60?
Yep, it's a full price game, and that's what is bugging people, that you know it should have been a DLC. Like for like $40, it would have been fine. You know, but $60 for a 6 hour game, that gets people going.
That's a bit too much.
Yeah. But how much is it in India? Are games still like 4,000?
Yeah, 4,000 something. Although this does come with the multiplayer component, Resident Evil Resistance. What's it called? Resistance? I think, I don't know. I haven't even tried it out. It's basically like Left 4 Dead, but Resident Evil version. So, but not a lot of people are playing that. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't.
How scary is it really? Like, I've always been intrigued by it.
Not scary at all.
Yeah?
Not scary at all. It's
maybe I'll give it a shot.
Sure, for you it might work out, but for people, long time fans of the Resident Evil franchise, for me that's a con. You know, you want to get scared. It's a horror franchise, and in this case it didn't feel scary at all. Antagonist is Nemesis, and he will find you, but those are more like sequences, and then you have to keep running away from him. In Resident Evil 2, Mr. X was like a looming threat that he can appear anytime, anywhere, and he will chase you down. In this game, it's not like that. So, you know, that kind of threat, scary feeling is not invoked enough.
So he'll find you, but maybe not kill you?
No, he will kill you, no. But it's quite predictable that you can, you know, when you're walking into an environment, you know, you have a feeling that, yes, he will show up. And then a lot of it is scripted. A lot of it is scripted, even though there are times that he will surprise you, but not as much as Mr. X from Resident Evil 2 remake. That dude would just pop up from anywhere, man. And you can't kill these guys, right? The only option you have is to get to a safe house or a safe room. Although in this game, you shoot his legs, he'll go down, he'll drop a weapon upgrade for you. So, you know, he is stoppable in this game.
Mr. X sounds like the antagonist from like a B-grade horror movie.
Oh yeah, man. When you play Resident Evil 2, then you'll know how scary he is.
I'm actually like interested in a remake of Silent Hills, and we've been hearing about that the last couple of weeks, that Kojima might be working on that with Sony. So that's...
Microsoft, by the way. Microsoft is also trying their best to buy those properties.
Yeah, that's one more reason other than Flight Simulator for me to consider an Xbox.
Yeah, so you never know who's going to get those franchises, man. Even a licensing deal.
Like Pyramid Head was, and like Silent Hill was a big thing for me as a kid. Like that genuinely creeped me out way more than Resident Evil ever did. I tried out, I think I've only played Resident Evil 4 and it was okay. Just, I found the entire... the mechanics of movement and shooting to be a little off for me. I never really got used to it, which is why I never really got into the franchise.
So in this case, it's actually really good. The mechanics, it actually works in its favor. You can dodge the zombies and dodge Nemesis, and you have an unbreakable knife to kill them. It does have that over-the-shoulder camera layout similar to the Resident Evil 2 remake, but it works out well. It's actually quite fluid, the gameplay in this game. It's very responsive, so I think that's what I really liked about the game, was that the controls were tight this time.
Games, interesting, fun. So what else have you guys been doing?
You had an interesting case with you when you tried to play games this week, didn't you, Harish?
Well, Xbox Game Pass sucks, because I tried getting the Ultimate version so that it works across Windows and Xbox, because I wanted to give Forza Horizon 3 or 4 a try.
Yeah.
And then the damn thing would just not work. It installed just fine, but I launch it and I just get a gray screen. So Microsoft does not want me playing its games.
I don't know what's been happening with you. My Game Pass app. Harish, you got it right.
Yeah, man.
If you don't know what we're talking about, guys, listen to the previous episode and you'll get it. But mine works fine, man. And for even a lot of people that I know, it's working fine on their machines. So maybe there's something, some setting that you may have to tweak from the Microsoft Store, maybe. I don't know.
There's nothing. I mean, I've got like 6 digital storefronts where I play games on, and they're all working fine. It's just Microsoft that fucks up all the time.
It's still in beta, by the way.
But let's just go with this, that we've got some sort of a ghost in the shell situation. When you try to share your screen with Game Pass working on it, it froze our video streams. Yeah. Harish's computer locked up, which should not be the case.
That's Windows for you, man. I love it and I hate it at the same time, but what can you do, right?
By the way, talking about storefronts, it's not quite the same thing, but surprisingly, Sony's remote play thing has been buggy all week. So I had to resort to a third-party solution called Chiaki, which uses like this Python script to get your authentication code. And there's like a whole bunch of threads over on Reddit. Like nobody's able to log into the client. If you're already logged in, it's working fine. But if you're trying to set up a new client, it gives you some sort of a server timeout and it just doesn't work.
So I use it on my PC just because I want to play games on PC and chat to my friends on PS at the same time. I could log in. I was already logged in, so it worked fine for me. But I never noticed this. This is new to me, though.
Yeah, so I use that third-party app called Chiaki, and it worked pretty well. Like, I've been playing Yakuza all weekend.
Nice. That's a good
game.
That
game is so good.
So good. So Harish, good. This is why you should get the Game Pass to play Yakuza as well.
Hey, man, I already got the thing, but I'm not able to play the fucking thing.
So just look up on Reddit. Actually, even I faced an issue. It might be an older version of the app. That happened to me once, so I downloaded the new version.
Got it from Microsoft. I subscribed.
Yeah, same. But sometimes, just have a look. You never know, it might just work out.
Fine.
Did you try turning your PC on and off?
Yeah, I did. I'll actually ask my neighbor. I'm sure he works on some Xbox team somewhere. I live in a building full of Microsoft guys. I'll ask him.
Yeah.
I think he'll have the latest build.
And speaking of gaming, a new game, again, another game is coming. That's Final Fantasy VII Remake. I think it's the month of remakes, and I'm particularly very excited for that game. In fact, I can't contain my excitement, although I shouldn't be excited if I want to review it. But still, some people have already got the game in Europe and Australia, and I'm getting overly jealous. But that's a game I've been waiting for years. And finally, I get to play it this weekend, hopefully.
For a change, like, that's one game I'm kind of excited of just ordering it digitally. I'm all physical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There's a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah. All physical. But you know what? That's a very valid argument. I don't know if you guys heard, Last of Us Part 2 got delayed. Mostly because of logistics and Sony not being able to sell physical discs in various parts of the world. Now, the biggest argument that has popped up is that why can't people still buy it online? You know, just release. They said the game is ready. So, you know, just release it digitally. At least people who want to play the game, they can play it at launch, by buying it digitally. And as you said, you don't mind doing it. So that's clearly. And you're a guy who only buys physical games, right?
But wait, I know this one. They buy on actual physical discs because they may not have reliable internet where they can download like hundreds of GBs worth of games.
That's
right?
Perfectly fine. So, you know, what you can do is you can just leave the option for people who want to play on physical discs. They can obtain those discs when things get better. But people who can't wait, right, who want to play the game, it's kind of unfair to them that they can't just digitally buy the game and play it on their console whenever they want. In fact,
in that sense, they're leaving a large section of their audience behind, right? Because there'll be folks that play it and then they'll share their take on...
True. But either way, people who can't wait, let's say who can't wait for the game, they'll eventually buy the game online if they can't wait, right? Even if they were waiting for the physical disc. I understand not everyone has internet connections and everything. And if they don't have decent internet connections, I doubt they'll get the game despoiled because they won't be watching many YouTube videos and stuff, right? You never know. People who really want to avoid spoilers, they go full lens, man. I avoided Star Wars spoilers for a long time.
I use Chrome plugins to
same. I use spoilers. Sure, I mean, not everyone may be aware of how to do that, but you know, for people who have been waiting for years for this game, they were excited for it to launch next month, especially during lockdown period. You know, like, you need new games to give you new experiences to keep you entertained, right? And Sony's getting a lot of shit from their own fans that just release it digitally. You know, if you still want to play the game, we'll buy the game online and play it. And when the physical disc comes around, people who can wait for the physical disc, then they'll play it, right?
Or how about this? Here's a thought. make it a PlayStation 5 launch title and instantly sell 100 million units.
That'll do very, very well.
But what will happen is that people will assume that Sony is just being too money centric, like to being very, very greedy. And I mean, especially since they've already promised the game for PS4, right?
So, like Microsoft then.
No, actually, Microsoft has been really good with gamers this time towards the end of this generation, man, with the Game Pass, with the fact that you can play the game on PC and Xbox at the same time if you've bought the game on Microsoft Store. They've been doing some really great work with the Game Pass and been supporting more, being more consumer friendly, to be honest. Not in the beginning, but now they are. They're more consumer friendly than Sony. And if they just switch this to a PS5 exclusive launch, then people are going to be really pissed. It may just backfire for them.
Yeah. Actually, on that note, have you heard all those new rumors about the PlayStation 5 and how they're struggling with power and like the
developers efficiency? Because they can't sustain efficiency, and Xbox is far better at that, and people are considering that it needs to have large vents, otherwise it's done. That console is dead.
I don't know. Like, I think there is some merit to those rumors, because I mean, it's not even just one source. It's coming from quite a few people, and it kind of makes sense that Sony hasn't shown the console yet. It quite possibly might be that, you know, that, well, that was a sentence. It quite possibly might be that they're struggling with getting the hardware inside the physical footprint that they've decided on.
Maybe it'll have flamethrowers.
It is a flamethrower inside.
Hey, wouldn't that be a thing?
I think they're finding problems with cooling of the console, and then the fact that they probably want it sleeker, but it gets too heated up. There's not enough airflow. I think a lot of things are working against the console. I mean, this is based on developers who have told somebody about it, and they're talking about it. So just take it with a pinch of salt. But still, I think it does kind of make sense that the reason why Sony has not been showing off the console. I mean, it makes sense to me that, yeah, they are coming, going through these problems for the new console, and that's why they're hesitating by showing the new console, the design of the console. So I guess maybe, I don't know. Could be right,
cool,
could be wrong.
I'm sure we'll be able to continue this thread next week as well, because it doesn't look like Sony is going to have its shit figured out anytime soon.
Nope, they won't.
Yeah, I'm just a little worried. Like, I'll still get a PlayStation, but...
Oh, everyone's worried.
Yeah, because I don't think they anticipated Microsoft bringing their A-game. And honestly, like, I am not even a Microsoft fan. I don't like the Xbox brand at all. There's no game on there for me. But they've nailed the gaming sentiment. They've got the hardware sorted. They've delivered on the messaging, which actually matches to the buyers.
And this is coming from a brand that fucked up their Xbox One launch.
Yeah.
That's a bigger story than what Sony is doing, because they bounced back, which is not easy in a gamer's mind share, right? People talk about mind share all the time, and gamers are hard to convince, man. I mean, I jumped ship from the 360 to the PS as my primary console.
So are we going to see an overconfident Sony like the PlayStation 3 era? We'll find out in the weeks to come.
Yeah. And talking about weeks to come, how's work from home, or, well, all of this isolation nonsense getting to you guys?
So 3 weeks in, now I'm finally craving my favorite coffee shop, because I want to go out and get my favorite cold brew. And I'm craving a bit of barbecue, so I want to go out and get some barbecue.
He's asking how work from home is going, not your cravings.
Well, that's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, work from home. I've been doing it for a decade now, so more than that. Like, that bit hasn't really changed for me.
I ordered pizza the other day, so yeah, I know where you come from.
I don't know how that's even legal.
I don't approve of that, Akshay.
Wait, I don't know why I said legal. I'm losing my mind. I'm just irritated that you got to eat pizza, and we've had to make our own food for the last, I don't know, five or six weeks.
Oh, no, this was last week, man. I'm going to go make pizzas right after this podcast.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
How could you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had it to, has man. Been crazy.
For me, man, things have been largely the same. I've been playing a lot of games. As I mentioned earlier, I finished Astral Chain because I wanted to get done with all the single-player games I had since Final Fantasy is coming around. Curiosity Stream has been killing it for me, watching a lot of Naruto. But this week, I'm also a DJ, if people don't know that, and I'm going to be live streaming one of my sets later this week.
So, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So when are you doing it?
Probably Tuesday on Facebook. I am not sure where right now. I'm still talking to the folks who want to host it. And the timing should be around 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. It's going to be a 1-hour set.
Nice. Yeah, so we're going to be tweeting that out on the official handle, which is Untitled Gadget. And
I just realized that if somebody's listening to this next Wednesday, they would have missed out on all of this.
And if you watch it late, like, you can probably just go watch a rerun of Akshay doing his thing.
Yeah.
Wait, if you do a live set, does the video still stay on after
Yeah, because the kind of music I play is not really commercial. It's like underground stuff, so not a lot of it gets picked up by Facebook. How they ID content and then bring it down if it's a copyright copyright strike. YouTubers know what that means. So, I guess Facebook is a little bit more lenient. And the kind of music I play doesn't really get picked up. So it does stay there for a while if it doesn't get detected. But there's a good chance that it may get taken down. So you never know. Not while it's live, but definitely after that.
Well, there's an incentive for folks to tune into that.
So, Harish, we've got like 4 minutes before the country shuts off its lights. What more do we have?
Oh my god. Forgot about that.
I have to unplug my shit, man. I don't know what this country is going to do.
How are you going to make your pizza? Like, this...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, obviously after that, I mean...
Yeah.
This podcast, I don't know if people know this, we were supposed to record this later on. And I was supposed to make pizzas earlier, but then I reminded these guys that 9 p.m. we have to, mow these Instagram channel challenges on. So we decided to record this earlier. Now let's see what happens, man. I don't even know if we're going to get power back. I don't know.
Oh, good. Well, at least I have 1,000 or so books, so should be fine.
So this is how the country's power grid goes down.
Yeah. Intentionally and because of a pointless PR challenge. Good to know. What have you been doing, Dhruv, in like a minute and a half?
I'm getting anxious now. I've just been playing Yakuza, working as usual. I saw WrestleMania last night and I'm looking forward to the next bit of it today. I'm not a huge fan.
You're actually looking forward to that?
It's entertainment, man. It's just time passing. And to be honest, like I used to follow it religiously back in the 90s.
Yeah,
same, man. I knew that was the bomb.
Shit. Sorry, guys. Like, whenever I say back in the 90s, and lately I've been saying that a lot, like, it just reminds me of the BoJack song. And I was on a very famous TV show back in the 90s, so that.
Oh, which one?
That's for the next episode. We'll get to that.
Okay.
That's quite the cliffhanger there.
We're going to start the next episode with that.
Yep. So... Undertaker versus AJ Styles. That was a great match last night. Very entertaining, very cringy, like a B-grade college movie. Good fun.
American Pie and shit.
Pretty much. But yeah, other than that, it's work as usual, man. So nothing's really changed over here.
What about you, Harish?
I ended up streaming the fourth season of Money Heist.
I've heard a lot about that season.
Yeah, it's a pretty great show. It's a Spanish show. Bank heist, great drama, the plot is pretty great. Yeah, overall pretty decent.
Oh, hey, you might like this one. So I'm watching this show called His Dark Materials.
That's what she said.
What the hell? Dude, no.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah, cool. Good one.
Did you read the book, though?
I did not. Now I wish I had, because the show's pretty good. I like the setting, the premise. So, since it's just season one, and I'm sure they'll just cover like a little bit of the book, I think I'm just going to get around to reading it as well. Though, like you, I'm not really getting in that much reading this year. So,
yeah. I'm not getting any done.
It's all about gaming for me, man.
I still just read that one or two books. But anyway, no, I didn't really like the show because I read the books. I was going in with that mindset, and it's quite different from, I mean, the TV show is quite different from the book.
That's usually my problem with these shows. So if I've seen a show, I just can't get into the book after that. And like, usually what I do is that if I like the first episode of a book-based show, I'll just not watch it any further, read the book first, and then come back to it.
Right.
This time the show's kind of got me hooked, and I'm regretting it because I feel that the book will be much better.
It is. It's so detailed and nice. We saw the first 30 minutes. My wife also read the book and she likes it. So we tuned into the first 30 minutes of the show, and then we just could not get into it. There's just such a drastic difference between the two. You like the book so much more. I know that's a thing that everyone says. Okay, I hear a lot of things going on in the background.
Yeah, I think everyone's getting impatient for the lights to go off. Before we go, I need your predictions. And I know you guys hate this part, but we have to. Next week, the OnePlus 8 series is launching. So I need your starting prices for each model, OnePlus Z, if that is happening, or whatever the hell they will call it, 8 Lite.
Let's just go with the 8 and the 8 Pro now. Like, we don't know if the Z is coming. We know the 8 and the 8 Pro.
Let's go with the 8 and the 8 Pro. Okay.
8 should be around 38,999, and 8 Pro should be around 58,999.
Okay.
39,999 and 55,999.
Ooh, hey!
I'm gonna go with 37,999 for the 8, and I will go 48,999 for the 8.
Whoa, that's ambitious! I don't think it'll be that low.
I want it to be like that low, man.
the difference between needs and wants.
I think that's what we all expect. But yeah, you never know how wrong I might be.
All right, that was fun. Now we really need to go. Thanks for tuning in to the 8th episode. We will be back next week if the power grid is still online. If not, welcome to the apocalypse.
And make sure you listen after the outro is done. We have an Easter egg for you.
Several.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Take care.
Oh, right. It's me doing the fucking thing. Okay, it's okay. Everyone chill out. It's just me. I let it.
Yeah, it's all synced anyway. It's fine. You can start off now.
Today, I'm joined again by...
Don't tell me you forgot our names. Harish, I'm gonna kill you.
I was going to say Yash first, and then I'm like, oh no, this is the first time he's been on. So today, I'm once again joined by Akshay and Dhruv, and we have a special guest, Yash Garg.
It's not your day, man. It's not your day.
This is why I don't see something when I'm talking.
Oh yeah, now that's gonna go in the bloopers.